is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, the final segment. Thank you for staying through that political roundtable that we had as we had a chance to kind of discuss and dissect what's going to be happening this week at a couple of different preliminaries, Weymouth, Brockton, Quincy. And joining us, it is my honor to be able to speak with a gentleman who is going to be inducted into the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I also believe he is going to be somebody who is getting an honorary degree this fall from Massasoit Community College. We have none other than Mr. Edward Perry, our owner here at 95.9 WATD. Welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Why, thank you, Kevin. It's nice to be here.
This isn't your first time on Monday Night Talk. I mean, I know you've been on our station many times, but did Bobby Hedlund ever have you on his program?
Yeah, Bob Hedlund and I used to discuss political issues from time to time, but I don't think I've ever been on this program since you became basically the lead guy on it.
So this is kind of an oversight that I think I might be fixing right now.
Okay.
It's like, it works for me. I guess the first thing I would ask you is, out of the box, is what's it like to know that you are going to be inducted into a Hall of Fame and that you are somebody that's being recognized with an honorary degree?
Well, I think I'm honored on both counts. It's interesting, though, that I am being honored with both the honorary degree and the Hall of Fame induction for doing something that I really like to do. And that's the good part about it for me, is that you get recognition for doing something that is fun, that I think is meaningful, and I think is necessary for the communities that we serve. Or at least we try to keep the word serve in there. So, yeah, it means a lot to me, both of these honors.
How did you get interested in this thing that we call radio?
Well, I would credit my second grade teacher, Elizabeth Spooner, back at the West Elementary School in Natick, Massachusetts, as really the person who unintentionally got me interested in broadcasting. She was a very nice teacher, and she used to bring people from the community into our second grade classroom to talk about the things that they did to make a living in the 40s. And one day, she brought in the chairman of the school committee. His name was Paul Ambler, and he did an interesting thing. He was a musician. He actually made his living by running a band and singing, and he came in to demonstrate to the kids in our second grade class what music was all about and what he did with it and how he did it. Well, one of the things that Paul brought with him to demonstrate the value of getting music on the radio was a little radio transmitter and a bunch of radios. And he took the little radio transmitter and hooked it up to a microphone up at Miss Spooner's desk, and then proceeded to put the radios around the back of the room and turned them on. And sure enough, there we were, second graders watching a real radio broadcast, albeit with a little transmitter positioned under the second grade teacher's desk. However, it was impressive, and I decided that I wanted to do that kind of thing. Now, I had no musical ability. I couldn't sing, but I wanted to become a broadcaster. And so after that happened, I started badgering my parents. I want a transmitter. I want a transmitter. My father was a college professor at Boston University, and he taught history. And the last thing he wanted to do was to have his kid with a radio transmitter. And so for about a year, they put off my continuing requests to become a radio broadcaster. But finally, I badgered them so much that they went out and they bought me a thing called a Microvox wireless microphone. And it was a little microphone that had a transmitter built right into it and a battery and a little tube and everything. And it would put an AM signal out about 200 yards. And so I decided that I would, in third grade, that I would institute a news broadcasting system for our neighborhood. And I talked my sister into dragging me around the neighborhood, our street, with this wireless microphone in a radio flyer cart. And I would go, as I would go past people's houses, and they had the big, made the big mistake initially of having their shades up, and I would report on the radio what was going on in their houses. And eventually they learned very quickly after they turned the radios on,
shades down.
It was a good idea to put the shades down. And so I gradually went out of the radio news business, at least for a while, when the shades went down, as they heard the news about what was going on in their houses on the radio.
So what did you, I mean, did you decide to go to college for any formal training to be a broadcaster, or was it a matter you wanted to just make the leap that you would one day own your own station, build your own radio station, understand frequencies and all of the minutia to owning a radio station?
Well, it's an interesting thing is that I was in high school. I was a geek, and I didn't play football. I didn't play basketball. All I did was make stuff for science fairs, and
that's pretty cool, though.
And write stories and poems and stuff like that. And I really sort of envisioned myself, as my parents envisioned me, becoming an English teacher somewhere. And but that would have been okay. But I really wanted to get on the radio. Unfortunately, back in the 50s, in those days, you had to have the deep voice to be the disc jockey. And if you didn't have a deep voice, and I didn't, you weren't going to get hired in radio. So the answer to that was pretty simple. My junior year in high school, for my science fair project, I built a radio transmitter. And this was a nice radio transmitter. This was a radio transmitter that used my favorite vacuum tube 6L6s. And it had 50 or 60 watts of power output. It had a good modulator in it. It sounded good. And it operated up on 1620 kilohertz, which is right above the top of the AM band. And virtually every radio, AM radio, would pick it up. FM was just getting started then. Mm-hmm. So everything was AM. Well, we set that antenna, we set the transmitter up at my house in Natick, and we began to broadcast to the towns of Natick and Framingham in the evenings. And it was a lot of fun. What we would do is we would put on, to get the adult audience first, we would put on a Broadway play, an LP of a Broadway play. We'd play both sides of it, South Pacific, Oklahoma, The King and I. And that would attract the senior audience, the parents who had been to those shows. Mm. And they had the opportunity to hear it loud and clear without commercials on their home radio. So they turned the radios on. And then at 7 o'clock at night, we'd play rock and roll music. And we do it from a listener's point of view, because we were the kids. Unfortunately, we got a little carried away. I got just a little bit carried away, because people in school, they had all sorts of wonderful things to say about WRAC, which was named for our clubhouse, Raccoon Hall. And it was a great little radio station, and we didn't sell commercials, but some of the local radio station in Framingham, they got a little nervous about the fact that here we were kids attracting the kid audience, and that maybe we would someday become their competition. Mm. Well, I got a bit of an ego boost there. And we decided to have some fun with some of the high school teachers in some of the stuff at the high school. Well, we had one algebra teacher. Her name was Miss Anna Finn, And she was a very, very good teacher, but she took no for an answer, never. That you would do what Miss Finn wanted, or else you would be in detention. And so she was a natural target. Well, Miss Finn was, she was a very pretty woman, but she was very large. And so I wrote this commercial that we ran on the air, and it went sort of like this. It was, and remember, this was in 1957, only 3 years after the close of the Korean War.
Okay, so this is risque. This was risque for that time.
Well, it wasn't risque. It was, I think, persuasive.
Okay.
So the ad went like this. Hi, the war's over, but Bethlehem Steel is still in business. No, we're not making tanks. We're not making airplanes. We're not making big trucks. We're not making bridges. We're making consumer items that makes your life easier. We make really good, durable consumer items, furniture, the things that you need for your home. For instance, how do we know our stuff is so good? Well, we make good, strong bed frames. And how do we know they're so good and so strong? Well, we made Miss Finn's bed. Well, that was about it. Miss Finn heard about that story, and she went to the principal of the high school. The principal of the high school was mortified, and he went to the FCC in Boston and said, "You can't let these kids do this anymore." And sure enough, the FCC arrived at our house. And they had a they had badges in those days, and they summoned my father at the door and said, "Mr. Perry, we want your son to stop doing what he is doing with that transmitter, and we're going to shut it down." Well, they let me keep the transmitter, but they sent my father, by certified mail, a very threatening letter telling him that if it ever happened again, he would be facing $20,000 in fines and potentially 5 years in jail. Okay. Well, my father was a very gentle man. He was well-educated. He was a history professor. He never used bad words until he got that letter from the FCC. And then he looked at me, and he uttered a group of expletives that I had never heard from his mouth before.
And that we can't share on the air, unfortunately.
Which we can't share on the air.
We'll invoke another fine from the FCC.
So that was my introduction to broadcasting. But, boy, it was cool. Because here I was, a geek kid, not an athlete, hard to get dates with the really good-looking hot chicks in Natick High School, but suddenly I was sought after. Those girls would come by my driveway. They'd come by my driveway. They'd come by the field we used to broadcast from outside, and they'd smile. And then they'd go to the movies with me. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Quite the gig. But you didn't stop there. Here we are. We're talking a radio station that you've had on the airwaves for, what, some 40 years? Close to 40 years?
Well,
around 40 years?
40 years with this. Almost 40 years. 38 years with WATD right now.
What was your vision for this? Has this radio station either lived up to or surpassed your vision for it?
It has surpassed what I thought could be done with local radio. And it's one of the things that I really want to mention here is that when we decided to start WATD, we didn't just build it in 1977. We built it, really, we began building it at least on paper at the close of 1972. When I was in 1970, I built and used to own, much of WCIB in Falmouth. It's a 50,000-watt station. I was in my 20s when we built it. And at the end of 1972, we decided, because of conflicts with my partners, that we were going to sell it. And so I started looking, where can we go? I was living on the Cape. Where can we go now? And my wife, who was then my girlfriend, she was working for Shawmut Bank in Boston, and she did bank location stuff, which meant she got to know about economics in areas. And I said to her, listen, where do you think we could put a station in an area that's not fully developed yet, but will get developed? And she said, well, we could look at the South Shore. So we picked out a bunch of towns down here, including Marshfield, Scituate, even Plymouth. And I figured out how to put a frequency, an FM frequency, into here, into one of the towns. And then my wife did some research, and she said, I think Marshfield is the place to do this, because this is where all of the economic indicators indicate that it's going to be at the center of the economic development for this area. And there's no broadcast station in an adjacent town unless you looked at the station in Plymouth that technically is not quite adjacent to Marshfield, adjacent to Duxbury. So really, it was a research project. And in 1973, we filed the papers with the FCC to take the frequency that was assigned to Martha's Vineyard from Martha's Vineyard and move it to Marshfield and replace that frequency that we were taking with a different frequency. There was a lot of FCC conflict there. The people in the vineyard didn't want to move their frequency, even though they weren't on the air yet. But finally, we convinced everybody to do what had to be done. And in 1977, we received a construction permit from the FCC to build WATD in Marshfield. Now, my idea for WATD was to truly make it into a community station, not just for Marshfield, but for the South Shore. And the model I used was the model that existed when I was growing up in Natick, which was WKOX in Framingham, where they really did a great job on local coverage. They broadcast all of the high school football games they could get their hands on. They were out in the community. They had a local news department. They had special shows. It was the model that you could look at and say, if we do that, we can develop a local radio station that will have regional impact. And that's what we did.
Again, we are speaking with WATD owner Ed Perry. He is also someone who is an inductee into the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame, going in with a Marshfield native. Joe Castiglione, I believe, is going to be one of those who's going to be joining you. What was it like to find out that some of your colleagues, some of the folks in the business, saw you as somebody who should be in the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame? What was that like, hearing the news, getting the letter?
Well, I was absolutely thrilled. Now, I should tell you, in fairness, that since its inception, I have been on the committee for the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and so I've had the opportunity to see who is getting inducted, sometimes to have a hand in picking people that would get inducted, and you always say, well, gee, if I'm taking a spot, and I'm still working, really, I'm taking a spot away from somebody who maybe isn't getting the daily recognition that I get as an active broadcaster. So it was always a conundrum for me, being on the board, saying, gee, you know, would I like to be inducted? Of course I would, but I'd be taking the spot of somebody who really needed it more, you know, who deserved it more, because I'm still trying to accomplish stuff, and they had accomplished stuff. So I finally, this year, they said, okay, we'd like you to be inducted. And I was absolutely honored. And I was about to say, yeah, but there are other people. And they said, furthermore, we're going to have the slot that we're going to give you, if you don't take it, we're not going to offer it to anybody else. So I said I'd be thrilled, because at that point it cured the issue that I'd been facing.
And what was the spot that you took? What is the award itself, or how, if I could ask, What exactly are you being inducted for? Is it just being a station owner, being somebody who has been a radio person in the Commonwealth? What is it?
Well, I don't really know. I've had so much fun in this business. I mean, when I was working from home, trying to get out, you know, after we sold WCIB in Falmouth, and I got to be in my early 30s. I developed a company called Educational FM Associates, and what my company did, and it ran out of my cellar called The Pit, an office called The Pit in Duxbury.
Creative.
We would do applications for colleges and high schools to get them FM broadcast stations all over the country. I handled colleges in Alaska. I handled the state of New York, state of Pennsylvania, went up to Maine, Vermont, all over the country, in virtually every state, getting people licenses. And so if you look back, probably there are 300 FM radio stations run by colleges and high school that I helped to get licensed. And so I guess that's probably one of the reasons. But also, you know, we've had a lot of fun with a lot of radio stations. We owned, after we built WCIB, we bought a station on Cape Cod or built a station on Cape Cod. We ran that for a while and sold it. We used to have a station in Webster, Massachusetts. We had a station down in Vernon, Connecticut. We had one in Brockton. We had actually the old WOKW
1410.
Yeah, we owned that for about 4 years. Then we sold it to our sales manager, who had a wonderful time with it for 10 years. So I really have no idea. I mean, I've had fun with the business. We've been able to accomplish something. And I guess that's probably why I got inducted. And one of the other things is that I have no talent as a manager. I'm too distracted. I'm too emotional about the business. So, in fact, some years ago, I changed my business cards. They used to say Edward F. Perry Jr., General Manager, WATD. Mm-hmm. Now they say Ringmaster, because I've come to the conclusion that nobody really is going to do what I tell them to do. My job now is just to keep the show moving, and that works.
Keep people motivated.
Yeah. Well, my only talent, other than having some technical ability, my only talent in this business, and maybe news coverage too, but
I think you're kind of underselling yourself. Anybody who has walked into WATD, walking in the front door, not walking in the TIC entrance, but you see awards everywhere, and I'm sure that you are responsible for a number of those awards that are hanging on the walls and the awards that have yet to be hung.
Well, there are many awards that have yet to be hung because we haven't put up the new ones yet because there's no wall space. But we're working on that. But I was an English major in college, and so I can write news. I won some national Edward R. Murrow awards for news writing, but that's what I learned to do in school. And what I learned to do out of school was all of the real radio stuff of keeping things going. And so my real talent here, I think, other than being able to write and build stuff, is the ability to figure out who's going to work, you know, to pick really good people and to, you know, support them in the jobs that they do. Because really, when you think about it, all we do in radio is we put on a show. It's like a Broadway show. And, you know, the audience, my job is to get the very best people, the people to create the content, the people to deliver the content, then the people to sell the content, because if you don't sell the tickets, you're not going to be able to pay the cast. So the whole idea is to be able to put it together. And I can't do that. I'm too distracted again. But if I am able to get really smart, dedicated people who understand the business of radio and love it as much as I do, and they are the people who get the stuff done. And so it's been working out pretty well, and I've been having fun.
And it was funny you mentioned, because as you're mentioning it, I'm thinking of the list of people, the people who are a part of the WATD family, whether it's the Christine Jameses, the Dave Skills, the Rob Hackles, the Kathy D's, the Larry Nelsons, the folks, you know, to even the folks who come in,
you know, when it's darkest, like the Peter Blacks and, you know, the folks who come in here and who do programming that make this such an eclectic station. And you're responsible for keeping all those balls up in the air.
Well, and sometimes you drop them, you know. But the good thing is, if you hire the right people, they bounce.
Excellent way to kind of put it. Anything you want to say in closing as we are coming to the close of this segment, close to Monday Night Talk here? And, of course, our guest for the final segment has been Ed Perry, who is the owner of ATD and also the inductee into the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame. Anything you want to say in closing, Edward?
Yeah, I think radio is still a wonderful business. You know, the internet is competition, but the way I look at local radio, it's the old song. I've forgotten who did it. Pilot of the Airwaves, and it goes. The lyrics go a little like this: Pilot of the Airwaves, here is my request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you sound like a friend to me.
It's funny you mention that, because that's one of my favorite songs to play here on the airwaves with one of your DJs. That's Mr. Ron Dwyer, who always finds a way to hit the bass note in the song. If you listen to him on Saturdays and Sundays, he'll play that song. And I know exactly which one it is, and I can't think of the name of the artist at the moment, but Ron will sing to it. So
I'm sure he will. But the bottom line is that radio is still, you know, you hear people talk about, hey, that's my radio station. Mm-hmm. You don't hear them say, oh, that's my internet connection. Yep. You don't hear them say, oh, that's my television station. Radio is a personal medium, and if we do it right, we will sound like a friend because we behave like a friend, because people can call up here and they can say, oh my God, I'm having a yard sale, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, and I need some help. I'm doing a fundraiser. That's what we're here for. We're using the public airwaves, and when we use the public airwaves, we've got to serve the public.
Well, you've done a great job for nearly 40 years, and I'm sure you're going to be around for close to another 40. Again, we've been speaking with Edward Perry, and that's another Monday Night Talk. Thank you very much for tuning in and making ATD your radio station. Until next week at 6:15, have a great evening.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com, the South Shore's news, weather, and traffic station.